Okay, we were talking about this topic of Mechirat Beit HaKnesset. So the Shulchan Aruch, I'm sorry, I didn't have a chance to Xerox it. Just the Shulchan Aruch says, this is Simon Kuf Nun Gimel. Beit HaKnesset, Livenim ve'etzim mi-Beit HaKnesset. Either the building itself or the raw materials that constitute the building. That have been knocked down, yicholim litain b'matana. So we paskin that you can give these things as a gift against the opinion that wants to indict Netanyahu. Remember, last week we saw there's a machlokus about what is the status of a gift in halacha.
There's no free gift.
Hmm?
There's no free gift.
Well, that's one opinion, but apparently, we say that gifts are freely given, and. And it can be done. De'i lav dehave luhu hana'o mino lo have. Oh no, I'm sorry. De'i lo have hana'o mihu lo have yave lo. There is some exchange. In other words, it only exists if it works by exchange. So the giver of the gift, the giver of the champagne, the giver of the cigars, does get something in return.
Something that could just be his pleasure giving.
So that's not.
In theory, but the assumption being that you don't give away large amounts of a property without getting something, and that something is tovat hana'ah. The other guy owes you one. You know, that's the definition of gnevas das. We once learned this sugya many years ago when we learned chulin. Check your notes. What is gnevas das? We think gnevas das is theft of intellectual property, right? And you know, sometimes if you get the Mordechai Ben David CD, it says you can't copy this CD because it's gnevas das.
Or misleading somebody.
Yeah, so that's gnevas das is not theft. That's only like in a colloquial sense. In other words, if I steal your hat, I'm stealing an object. But if I copy a CD from you and then give you the CD back, what am I stealing? I'm not stealing. There's no physical object that I'm stealing. We all understand that I'm somehow cheating whoever gets the royalties on the CD from something. But there's no object which is being stolen, right? It's only what we call intellectual property. So that's why colloquially that's referred to as gnevas das. But that's not gnevas das in the strict halachic sense. That's not gnevas das. It's gneva. Right? In other words, you can steal something that doesn't exist in a physical sense if you rob somebody of their financial
potential.
Gnevas das is what the Gemara calls. Anybody remember? It was only like 10 years ago.
Was it?
You were out that day. You didn't know it was going to be on the test.
For the classical cases, when you go into the store, we are going to buy mislead the seller into thinking it's true.
No, that's called onat dvarim. That's causing like some kind of oppression to somebody. You raise their hopes into thinking that they're going to finally make a sale. Gnevas das is what the Gemara calls hamachzik tova b'chinam. Getting somebody's gratitude for nothing. So we've all made simchas, bar mitzvahs, weddings, whatever. You know, you can't invite everyone in the world. So, you know, frankly, you might not make the cut. So we're not going to invite you because we have a limit of how many each side can have. Not you personally, I'm just using it as an example. If we make a wedding,
I want to go to bed anyway.
So, but I happen to know the wedding is taking place in the summer when you go away anyway. So knowing that you're not going to come, I send you an invitation. If I thought you were going to show up and take somebody else's place, I wouldn't have invited you. That's gnevas das.
I remember that when I get the invitation.
No, that's gnevas das, because it's machzik tova b'chinam. Now you feel indebted to me. You'll make a simcha, you're going to feel you have to reciprocate. Right? That's the case of gnevas das.
There has been discussion in recent years, a question arising, whether you can, what does it mean to go to a store and ask the price, and then go to another store and ask the price, and go to another. You're only going to buy from one of them. You're misleading the other two.
Right, but that's not. This is not called Gnevas Das, right?
Okay.
Right.
Gnevas Das is when you bought something and then you go to the store afterwards and you say you just want to make sure that you didn't pay too much.
Right.
Buy the CD, copy it, and give it back.
What? My mother was. My mother was telling me. That's like that Costco has this like no questions asked return policy.
Lands End
just ended this. You know, you could wear like a pair of Lands End shoes for 20 years. They finally wear out. You can return them for a full refund, which sounds crazy to me. But Costco has a no returns, no questions asked returns policy. So my parents are moving. So they're getting rid of lots of things. They have one of these, you know, we have like the Nespresso machines. They call them, there's a Keurig machines, you know, with the pot, with the coffee pots. So she doesn't need it anymore. She's had it for 2 years. She returned it. It's perfectly legal. The stores. So she told me there was an article in the paper that on January 1st, somebody returned. At Costco, they sell, you know, live Christmas trees. January 1st, somebody returned, you know, Christmas trees. I don't need it anymore.
But without any criticism of anybody who does that, isn't it a little bit wrong to forget what Costco policy is? Get to the store, has this policy. Okay, the store has this policy. But to use something, you get all the hana that you want from it, and then you return. It's like you borrowed it without ringing.
Yeah, look, in other words, these stores have this because most people are normal, not like my mother returning it to you.
No, but it's exactly what we like about it. Because she'll shop at Costco.
Because she'll shop at Costco.
Why would she possibly shop anywhere else?
Right. The fact that they accepted this debt, the fact that they accepted a dead Christmas tree 2 weeks after Christmas in return, is worth it for the PR that they get out of the fact that
my father,
somebody's crunched the numbers and figured this is worth it. Then,
whenever he would buy tools, he would always go to Sears. I thought their tools were any better than anybody else's, but he goes like that. Something was wrong. Doesn't matter when I bought it.
Right.
I can return it.
So anyway, this is a sidetrack. The Shulchan Aruch goes on.
Do you want a bigger cup?
Oh, yeah.
There are options for bigger cups. Yeah. I'd also be like...
Right, but the point is that unless there's an exchange of something, you have no way to lahafkia, to eradicate the kedusha, not eradicate, but to exchange, to uproot the kedusha that was formerly in this building or in the bricks.
But it has to be something specific. It can't be just like, that's when they entirely understand last time, because if you have like a specific exchange, then the cat in the hat works. Comes back.
Cat in the hat too.
Cat in the hat comes back. So the kedusha is transferred. But if you can't just be, even if it was a tovat hana, like how could you possibly say that it's transferred to this idea of something, like, you know, a promise. A kedusha can't call on a promise or something. It can't be it has to be something very specific that suddenly gets that kedusha. So it has to be tangible thing.
But was the halakha basically, was the bottom line of the halakha that you came with the gift?
What would you do with it? I mean, otherwise, that's the only reason you could do it. Whatever you change it for, I guess the kedusha.
So the Mishnah Berurah says that, in other words, that if he hadn't gotten something in return for giving away this building or the raw material, the Mishnah Berurah says, "O shemekavim sheyilahem hanaami menu be'ezepam." Right. In other words, even if it's just the sense of he'll owe me one. Udafize litnu la anshe iro rechoka shebevadai lo nehenu velo yehenu mehem leolam asur taha enkan davar acher shetachul. But if you knew for some reason that this was going to be a gift, you were getting nothing in return. So then the kedusha would remain on this building, and the new owner of the building would be limited in what he could do with it. He could only really use it as a Beit Knesset.
Why was he getting something in return neutralize?
Because the Kedusha, that just like if I buy something with the money, the Kedusha transfers to the money. Money need not be coin of the realm. It can be anything of value in which is exchanged.
Right, but even though the thing that's gotten in return is not the same as the Kedusha, doesn't matter.
Right, so that's the mechanism by which the Kedusha, by which the building is now desanctified and can be used as, and if you want to give, right, if you want to give, let's say, there's an amuta that owns this building, right, which is a little different than the way the ancient world worked, but let's say, for our intents and purposes, it's the same. There's an amuta that owns this building. Let's say, I don't know, the amuta wanted to no longer be involved with this. That's not the way it works. It's such a weird hypothetical that I'm creating, because the amuta is whoever happens to, all of us will move away, and new people will come in and buy our houses, and presumably they'll also want to have, hopefully they'll also want to have a shul. Right? Although those people in Gush Katif thought the same thing. I remind you, they were shyless about what to do with the Bate Knesset in Gush Katif.
They left them standing, didn't they?
No, I think they
left them standing.
But let's say everybody decided we don't want this shul anymore. So we could give it to another amuta. And another amuta would take possession of it and they would run it however they want. And
but it would still have to be a Beit Knesset.
But it would have to be used as a Beit Knesset. Right? Because the Kedusha would remain on the building.
So then you can give it as a gift.
What?
You can give it as a gift.
But if you give it as a gift where there's something in exchange.
But you don't have to give it in exchange. It's still going to be used as a shul. There's no issue.
No. That's the point. When you sell it, the Kedusha transfers to the money. When you trade it, the Kedusha transfers to the object for which it's traded.
In the case you're talking about, you're giving it to another amuta or continue it as a shul.
So yeah, they would have to. Right.
There's no problem then about whether it's a sale or not a sale, because the Kedusha is remaining in the building.
Right, assuming they want. But if they don't want to, okay. So presumably it's being given away in exchange for something. So the Mishnah goes, Daha, in kan davar acher shetachul al ze kedushat beit ha-knesset. That is, if there's nothing for the Kedusha to attach itself to, then it's going to remain on the building. Al kain lo nifka kedushata v'asul l'shtamesh ba. You can't use the building for some other non-holy purpose. V'chol ze marei kishin notnim l'shtamesh bo b'chol. That's talking about if you want to give the building away to be used for a secular purpose. Those synagogues that we were talking about in those neighborhoods in New Jersey where everybody moved away, they sold the building. The building became a community center or a church or whatever it was. The Kedusha was transferred to the money, and the money was used to build a new shul in a new neighborhood where Jews actually did live, or was sent here to build the yeshiva and to light the lights of the Yerzeplex. Mutar. But to give it as a free gift, no strings attached, to people to daven in it, to continue as a shul, that's mutar. Zaha ein kan horada mikdusha, because the synagogue remains in its sanctity, and you're not in any way reducing the kedusha. Kamo shekatav be hagava, etc. etc. Let's go back to the Gemara.
I've got a theoretical case. In Australia, there's a shul that went into receivership.
That means the bankruptcy,
bank, the bank took it over.
Yeah.
That's a big problem. Because the bank taking it over, you don't get anything for it. The bank basically takes ownership of the building to use what it wants.
In other words, if the bank went into receivership, does that mean that the bank already owned it?
Well, they had a mortgage.
They had a mortgage. So the bank owned the building to begin with. In other words, that's what a mortgage is. I have a mortgage on my house. That means the bank owns my house, or at least a very large portion of it, and every month I buy back.
The bank has a lien on it. It's your house.
It's my house in the sense that it's my property. But
it's
that's what a mashkon is. It's collateral to that. Yeah, it's collateral. Right, correct. Correct.
The building was used as a shul.
Right.
That's something else. Let's say that a mutar rents a building and uses it as a shul. Where's the kedusha?
It might not have. Right? Because they don't have the right to.
So in the case of a shul being mortgaged to the bank, they don't really, it's like renting, you're saying.
Yeah, well, and as we discussed this before about the propriety of mortgaging a synagogue, even though it apparently is done. I don't know the details of how it's done. But in Echanami, go back to the Gemara. It happens to be line 25, if you would number the lines, which once upon a time I did in this Gemara. Kaf Vav Amud Beis. It's about three quarters of the way down in the skinny lines. The first word on the line is Le, Matano Kizvine. Period. Tanu Rabbanan. Tashmishe Mitzvah Nizrakin, Tashmishe Kedusha Nignazin. There are two types of mitzvah objects. Tashmishe Mitzvah, which I'll translate as mitzvah objects, and Tashmishe Kedusha, which I'll translate as holy objects. Tashmishe mitzvah can be thrown away when you're done with them. Tashmishe kedusha have to be put into gniza. They can't be thrown away. They have to be stored away in by being buried, by being put away in you know, this gniza box. Every shul has one of these gniza boxes. People think you could just put anything in there and it'll stay there for hundreds of years until some researcher will come and write a PhD about early 21st century Parsha sheets. He'll be the Solomon Schechter of his day. No. It has to be emptied out every month, and it costs money, and it's a big hassle, and etc. Not everything that gets thrown into the Geniza box really needs to be in the Geniza box. That's a different problem. Yeah, I'm not sure that you can bring half of these parsha sheets into shul, let alone require that they need Geniza, because most of them are just advertisements with a short, what might or might not pass as a Dvar Torah, to be machshir, spreading around in shul, right? In order to advertise, you know, a Caribbean cruise or Pesach in this hotel, or some of them are rather substantive. Some of them are substantive with things that. I don't know. How do you know which one I'm thinking of?
One very well glossy.
You know, we were
short.
The one in English.
We were a couple of years ago. We were in Mattersdorf for Shabbos at the Bravender's. It's a religious neighborhood of a different ifyun than our religious neighborhood, and they also have, you know, like one of these tables with 20 different pasha sheets. There was not a single overlap between the 20 parsha sheets that are distributed there and the 20 parsha sheets that are distributed by us. No, it was a very lit fish place. I don't think they let Chabad. I remember there was one that was like a neighborhood parsha sheet. There was a neighborhood parsha sheet that had on the back page a listing of all of the Ufrufs and Kiddushin and Shalom Zachers in the neighborhood. Like, so you could go and catch around. And on the front page, you're like in the New York Times, they always had like those two, I think they were called the dog ears. You know, on the front page of the New York Times, there are these two little boxes at the top right. So they had on one was the weather for Shabbos, and the other was the Shari Yatzig. All the news that's fit to print. So Tashmishe Mitzvah Nignazin, Tashmishe Mitzvah Nizrakin, Tashmishe Mitzvah Nignazin, Ve'elu Hein Tashmishe Mitzvah. These are examples of mitzvah objects which get thrown away. Sukkah, Lulav, Shofar, Tzitzit. Ve'elu Hein Tashmishe Kedusha. Dulus Kimei Sfarim. The sacks, the cases that Sfarim come in. Tfilin u'mezuzot. V'tik shel Sefer Torah. And the cover. Or maybe if it's a... In the Sfaradi Sefer Torah, which I don't think Sfaradi Sefer Torah, I don't think that's what the Chazal were talking about. Right, but I don't think that's what they were talking about. Presumably this is the, what we call in Yiddish the mantle that you put on the Sefer Torah, or the canister in which a Sfaradi Sefer is held. Yes, that would be for what we call sferi. That's what the Gemara calls sferi.
Wasn't a couple of pages ago that we were talking about a Sefer Torah and how it was wrapped in some sort of shawl or something
the,
like that?
In the mitpachot.
Right.
Yeah.
So what? Like it's
no. So that's the Mishnah. The Mishnah refers to the mitpachot of the Sefer, and this is the no, and it's, this is a brisa, but it's tefillin mezuzah v'tikshel sefer Torah v'nartikshel tefillin v'ritzuot tehen, the case of the tefillin and the ritzuot of the tefillin, the straps. The leather cases, not the bag you keep it.
The actual boxes?
Yeah.
The batim.
What we call the batim.
But not the box that the batim go into.
Apparently not.
I'm bigger head.
I'm sure they do.
Rather modern.
The tefillin, when they say tefillin, they mean literally the part.
Yep. So the question of what is a tashmishi mitzvah, what is a tashmishi kedusha, and what's the halacha, lamaisa, when we say tashmishi mitzvah nizrakin, did you ever see such a thing?
Yeah.
Klaf and mezuzah you throw away?
That's the chiddush that people don't follow the original. Because someone would say, do I have to? Should I really? No, you can always find a little bit. You know,
so the Shulchan Aruch says. So the Shulchan Aruch, what do you do with your lulav and esrog?
So the lulav I keep to burn with my father because that's the minhag that I got from my father.
Why is that the minhag?
I guess technically you said a bracha on it, so you shouldn't really throw it out.
Okay.
But the esrog, I hold out to it until it dries out, and then I no longer have the preserver.
So the Shulchan Aruch says chutei tzitzit shenifseku, right? Yachol lezarkan lashpa. Why? Because that's the din in the brisa. Tashmishe mitzvah nizrakin. When the tzitzis become posel, you can throw it in the garbage. Mipnei she. Well, hold on a second. Mipnei shehi mitzvah she'ein begufa kedusha. Tzitzis has no inherent kedusha. It's kadosh. Kol od, you can do a mitzvah with it.
Or,
it's not. Aval kol zman shehem kvuin betalit asur lishtamesh b'hem. But as long as the tzitzis are still attached to the beged, meaning as still as they're still kosher, so then you can't use them for some other use. You need something spills in the kitchen. You need a rag to mop it up. You can't use a pair of tzitzis.
What does that have to do with being attached to the beggar?
Meaning, as while it's still kashir, the example he gives is the tzitzis become ripped off of the talis, so they're puzzle, right? But as long as the whole, but as long as you still have a kosher talis,
but sometimes a tzitzis becomes just one out of the.
He cut it off in front.
No, so that's not possible. Pass me a toss.
That's not possible.
No. No. There are 8 strings here. But really, there are only 4 strings. It's 4 strings doubled over. You don't really need all 8 coming down past the knots. If you had 4 coming down, the beged would still be kosher. It wouldn't be mehuder, but it would be kosher. So if all 4 of these strings got chopped off when our little daughter, you know, like when kids start learning how to cut with scissors, right? So you come home, it looks like the parade after the Super Bowl. Your house is covered in confetti because the kid just loved to have those little kitty scissors and they just cut things up, cut up paper, his newspaper, whatever it is. So Adi learned how to cut with scissors. And Yair is walking. She was maybe two, and Yair was like 5 and a half. And so Yair is walking around with the little kids always have the tzitzis hanging down the back. So she's snipping off the. So if all four of these were chopped off, the beged is still kosher, because you have these four. But if one of these comes off, and one of these comes off, the beged is pasul, because it might be the same one. Right? If you knew for a fact, let's say one of, forget trelis, I'm not talking about trelis, but let's say you like when you buy a set of tzitzis to tie, usually they all come from the same factory. But let's say they got mixed up, and you used three chutim that came from one factory, one chut came from another, and they were slightly a different color, right? And you could tell by the color that the one from here and the one from there were not the same. It would also technically still be kosher. But because we don't know, if one comes off from this side, one comes off from this side, right, there's a chance. What's the mathematical chance?
Out of four.
Yeah, it'd be 25%. That it's the same chut. So then the beged is pasul. But let's say in a more classical, let's say the whole thing. If one of these four at the top that goes through the lula'a snaps, then the beged is pasul.
So once it's pasul, you just throw out the whole tzitzis. You have to cut off the tzitzis.
If the tzitzis become pasul, if the whole thing, let's say, snaps and comes off, you go to the store, you buy four new chutim, you tie it, you don't have
you
to
throw it. You throw the old ones in the bin.
And according to the din in the Shulchan Aruch, you can throw it in the garbage. Aval kozman shehem kvuin betalit, but as long as you have a kosher talis, asur l'shtemesh behem. You can't do non mitzvah use.
It doesn't say kozman kosher.
Yeah, I think I'm telling you what it means. Right? It means as long as it's right. If the beged was possible, let's say the beged was ripped. Right.
No, one of the tzitzit is pasul. I don't know how I understand from this. One of the tzitzit became pasul.
Yeah.
What do I? But it's still attached. It's just it's useless.
It's not tzitzit anymore.
Kigon l'kshor behem shum davar chiyotze beze mishum bizui mitzvah. So let's say I have a kosher talis. And I need to tie something up, right? In order to keep it from flying away, right? I can't do that. Why? Because it's bizui mitzvah. I'm treating the mitzvah object with disrespect. But once it becomes pasul, technically speaking, I can throw it in the garbage.
Or tie something up with it.
You could do anything you want. If you throw it in the garbage, kavachomer, you can.
Can you make it puzzle?
Can you make it puzzle? I don't think so, unless you had some compelling reason.
You don't want to spare the tzitzit anymore. I don't know. Your kids' tzitzit are like grown out. I don't know. Whatever. Like
you feel like meaning if it's not puzzle, but it's no longer in active mitzvah use. Yeah, there's no problem. Like, you buy a towel. You go to the store. So sometimes you can buy talis with tzitzis already tied, sometimes not. So you go to the store, you buy a talis that comes with tzitzis, white tzitzis. But you're one of the frumer makpidim from Efrat. So you, of course, wear trelis. You wear trelis? Because now you know you,
not to say.
Now you live in Efrat. In Efrat, we invented trelis here. So you want to put this. So obviously you have to first make the talis puzzle by unwrapping the white strings and replacing them with with the tchelis. So there's no inherent psul as long as the mitzvah. But you have an old pair of talis katan. It's more relevant for a talis katan, right? You should probably go through your talis katan more frequently than your talis gadol. Maybe the talis gadol doesn't last forever. But you have a talis katan. So after a certain number of years, that talis katan is gefelich. It's really whatever, but it's technically still kosher, right? So when it's time to retire it. So the act of mentally retiring and saying, "Look, I can't wear this anymore. It smells. It's frayed." It's, so then, technically, there's no problem in cutting off the tzitzis because you've.
But in fact, you would have to. You couldn't throw out the baby.
No, I think you could because saying that this is I'm retiring it is probably. Probably not. Right. However, the Ramo, you know who the Ramo is? Ramo is the guy we have to listen to. V'yesh omrim da'af la'achar shenifseku ein linhog behem minhag bizayon lizorkan b'makom migune. It's not proper. Even you have a tzitzis that tore off. You have a lulav that's possible because it's dried out. It's from last year's sukkah, so it's certainly no longer. Time for the mitzvah. It's after Hoshana Rabbah, right? You shouldn't just throw it away in the trash, like in the tzfardeya. That's a mokom meguna. You throw it in there. It's disgusting. It smells. There's cats. There's flies. Ella she'enan tzrichin geniza. You don't need to put it in the geniza, but neither says Mishnah Berurah. Neither the Rama says should you throw it stam in the trash. V'yesh medaktegim legonzan. Some people are makbid to put it in the geniza. Which is why you look in the Geniza and you will find an old talis, a pair of tzitzis, whatever it is. V'hamachmir u'medakdek b'mitzvah tavo alav bracha. Tavo alav bracha. Kippah is not a tashmishay mitzvah.
What about food items? There are food items that are definitely tashmishay mitzvah. Matzah, I'll say it, or wine for certain things. Is that have the same, wine from a... Under a chuppah, that's. I mean, no one drinks. I mean, I don't know. They drink the whole cup, but everybody.
I'm not sure. A kiddush cup is tashmishay mitzvah.
The leftover
wine, would we say it's a tashmishay mitzvah? You shouldn't. You finished making kiddush. There's still a quarter of a cup of wine. Can you throw it down the sink?
Or left from a brit.
Or left from a brit. There, people are machmir to. You know what they do with it?
They bury it.
You know, according to the school, you bury it under the esrog tree. It's a school for the Esrogim to come out. Ari Greenspan, who's the local moel, and also is the local meshuga and invents tchelis and all this other stuff. He has an Esrog tree. He buries the orlas under the Esrog tree.
Must have a Gavaldic
Esrog. I don't know. But that's a minig. That's not the din. There has to be an Esrog tree. I don't know. That's an interesting question about the... is a matzah... Like you buy a box of matzot. So after Pesach, there's always
quite a bit
of matzah left over. So you can't say that the matzah left over in the box is even according to the Gro, who holds that eating matzah is a mitzvah kiyum, it's all 7 days. But the matzah left over in the box, you can't say that that's tashmishay mitzvah. But you put out the three matzahs on your seder plate. And there's leftover. You said a bracha over it. You said two brachas over it. It's hard to, I don't know. It would be hard to say.
The Sfarim and Israelis, you have to pass off the matzah, they don't make a mozi.
Yeah, right. I don't know. We'll have to look into this question. But this is the source, the chumrah in the Ramah is the source. So first of all, you do want to throw away you don't want to put it in the Geniza, right? But what do people do with their left with their posled tzitzis? So if you're going to throw it away, you have to wrap it up and throw it away. The same way, what does that remind you of? Kedusha Shvius, right? The Kedusha Shvius. Right? The posled tzitzis don't have more Kedusha than the Kedusha Shvius, right? But you have to wrap it up and you can't throw it out the same way you throw out the chicken bones. according to the Rama. But there's certain things that Minog developed based upon this idea. Kevan de Ovid ba mitzvah chada, teva ba mitzvah achrina. Since it already served you for one mitzvah, piggyback on it and get it to do another mitzvah. So that is the minog. You save the lulav, and then you use it to start the fire for srevas chametz. Right? It's not that you burn your lulav with the chametz. Right? You use the lulav as kindling or as fuel.
So in Efrat, no one's doing that. I mean, there is the
more size. Fuel.
No, I'm saying, but. Fuel's everything throwing in there is fuel. I mean,
you said it, but you always need a little extra.
Love is better fuel than all the other garbage they stick.
It's better than the plastic that everybody throws in. So anyway, the point is, you go out to the drum to burn your chametz. The fire's already burning. You should put your lulav in first, right? You shouldn't put in your chametz. And it's in order to really be makayim this minig, you should put in the lulav first. You can imagine like a sefer, like Sreifas Lulav Kehilchasa. Right, but you should put the lulav in first, and then throw in the chametz, right? Because it's not stam that you're burning the lulav; it's that you're using the lulav in the service of another mitzvah. People, you go into any yeshiva in the world, and what do you see in the bookmarks? What's the bookmark? The posel tzitzis. I have at home quite a few svarim that have a tzitzis hanging out. They make a nice bookmark, right? And kevan David ba mitzvah chada, David ba mitzvah achrina. That's what we do. There are certain things it's really hard to do with. One of the things the Brisa mentions is a sukkah. So what does that mean? Like with a lulav, with an esrog, with a
sukkah?
Maybe also the tefanos.
Just have a lot of chametz.
Why not? In other words, you can't really put. It's not just that you can't. So, Beseder, you're not going to use the schach, you know, the kapot marim, to do another mitzvah. It's just not practical. Like, what could you possibly do with it? And what do people do? They take it, they leave it piled up next to the tzardeya, right, until the garbage truck comes.
Following the breita.
Well,
following the breita.
So it's the Ikar Din, but if you want to follow the din in the Ramo, as the Ramo says, if you want to be machmir and put things in Geniza, tavo la bracha, but minimally, according to the Ramo, you can't just throw it in the garbage.
Well, you know what? You're putting it next to the garbage.
It's migune. It's you're making a garbage heap in the middle of the street. It's migune. So I don't know, like how, I don't know,
so
I mean...
You're separating it from the rest of the garbage.
Only because it doesn't fit into the pach. You'd throw into the pach if you could.
Give it to a Sephardi.
We have to sell our schach to a Sephardi after Sukkos. Right? Right. And then we have to give them our kidneys. So you see, like, in exchange for kidneys, they get the kidneys and they get to throw away the schach. So I'm not sure. So the truth is, we have in our house next to where we make our sukkah. You've been to our sukkah? We have this big sukkah. And one side is the wall, which is the wall of the park. And there's a ledge. And every year I just throw up the schach up there. And it sits there. There's a pile of schach going back a few years. And it composts, I guess, over time. And it's also easier than schlepping it up to the garbage. But everybody, I'm not saying this is also, because obviously the whole wide world does this. It can't be. But it's a question. It's a question.
Well, what about the esrog?
The esrog people keep for jelly, or they keep for besan.
And then you can throw it out when it all dries out, or the esrog jelly goes clean in the back of the fridge.
Then you can. No, I think once the esrog jelly, then you can throw it out.
You shouldn't eat the jelly.
What?
It's a really bad idea.
You shouldn't what?
Say that the esrog that we get are like
very unhealthy.
So covered in pesticides, they keep them the right colors that it's like. Really, really not a good idea to eat any maple.
I made it for jelly this year, but I don't use the peels, I use the insect.
Yeah, but the pesticide gets
it. Yeah, stay away from that.
I think if you eat one pesticide and estrog a year, you're okay.
What about strawberries? Strawberries are worse.
I think that's right.
Strawberries aren't worse.
Oh. Anyway, so.
There's no picoa. That's what it is.
Yeah, so that's what kind of mitzvah object is a Beit Knesset? A Beit Knesset is Tashmish HaKadusha?
Yeah, it says, we talked about the whole thing of the Kedusha. It's the highest on the food chain.
A Beit Knesset is not the highest on the food chain. Beit Knesset is the lowest on the food chain.
It's on the chain.
It's on the chain. It's true. It's true.
But the actual materials aren't. I mean,
what makes it Tashmish HaKadusha? What's come?
It holds a Sefer Torah.
It holds the Sefer Torah. What's common to all the Tashmish HaKadusha?
The Kedusha is not inherent in the building. You can transfer it, meaning that it's separate from the building. You can't transfer Kedusha from your Sefer Torah, from a tefillin,
right.
But you can from a building. So it's not inherent in the building.
Correct.
No, you can transfer.
You can transfer.
No, you can't. You can't transfer the Kedusha. You can't transfer the Kedusha of a Sefer Torah.
Oh, the Sefer Torah itself will remain.
Yeah. No matter what you do, the Sefer Torah remains Kadosh.
Even if it's possible?
If it's possible, it remains it maintains the Kedusha of a Tashmish Kedusha Shenifsaru, and therefore requires Geniza. But you can't say, I want to desanctify the sale. There's no mechanism. The whole conversation that we've been having is about the sale of a Beit Knesset, but not about a Sefer Torah, or a mezuzah, or a tefillin. There's no way to desanctify them. They can become possible.
But the money still has Kedusha. If you sell a Sefer Torah, it still has the Sefer Torah's got Kedusha, and the money's got Kedusha now.
The Mitpachot also?
The Mitpachot, well, we'll see. He describes the covers of the set of the Brisa describes the covers as being Tashmishe Kedusha, which means they have some kind of inherent Kedusha. Now, why should the cover of a Sefer Torah have more kedusha than a lulav, than a shofar, than a talis?
It's associated with.
Yeah. So what's the common denominator to all the Tashmish kedusha?
Torah. Words of the Torah.
They have a shem shem in it.
The Torah text.
The mitpacha doesn't have text.
Ah, so the mitpacha, the cover of the sefer doesn't have text.
What's the cover?
Right.
And Aron doesn't have text. The ritzuot don't have text. But these are things that are
integral parts of the
sefer. Are
covering
one degree of separation and are in the service of the text, of the holy written text.
Is the Gemara going to define what's counted as Sfarim here?
Yeah, well, in other words, the Mishnah had already described Sfarim as being the other Sifrei, a Megillah, right? Yeah, a Megillah is
on cloth,
yeah. Right. When it talks about Chumashim, I mean, it could also be printed holy texts, presumably, right? In other words, is a printed Chumash.
That's what I'm asking.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Tashmish Kedusha or Tashmish Mitzvah?
A bag that you put your
Chumash
in. That's what it's talking about.
Well, here the bag is not Stama bag. Like if I have to walk to Shul and I take my Chumash and I put it in a ShopRite bag, the ShopRite bag does not become Tashmish Kedusha.
It
means like the custom fitted cover of a scroll,
like, yeah,
right? A custom fitted thing, which the Gemara will discuss it. Does it mean it's there to beautify, or it's there to protect? Like most of them, every last week, you know, it's like amazing. When I was a kid, you went to shul. The chazan had a Megillah. The maybe the Megillah probably even belonged just to the synagogue, was owned by the synagogue. So here you go to shul. And you have, I don't know, if there were 300 people in shul, maybe there were 50 people that had kosher Megillahs.
Modern marketing by the Sofrim.
By the Sofrim, right? I mean, Baruch Hashem, right? Megillah is a pricey item. It's not something you're going to buy every other day. The shul had a couple sets of lulav. People shared them, and
they were imported.
Only the holy machers had had their own lulav and esrog. That's the different. I get on that horse before Sukkot about buying lulav and esrog for your kids. So what's the, when we say it's the holy text, which holy text makes it holy?
Hashem's name.
Oh, so presumably like the center, like if you keep peeling away the layers of this onion, right, the center of the Kedusha is Shem Hashem.
So a Birkon would be Tashmei Kedusha.
A Birkon? Not necessarily. But when we talk about Geniza, things that have to go into here it's called Geniza. In America, we used to call it Seamus. What is Seamus? Shemot. All of the holy writings that have one of God's seven holy names, principally Yud Ke Vav Ke, Yud He. Ado, Noi, Kale, Aleph, Lamed, Elohim. Did I count them all? Shakai. Right? Did I count them all? And the Rambam lists the seven holy names that require Geniza. We're also makpid anything that has at least a pasuk shalem from Tanakh, which would include every birkon, which would include when the proliferation of these parsha sheets started. And it became a real problem. So now the parsha sheets generally try to be makbid not to write Shemash. They write one of the kinuim,
and no psukim because
hey, whatever. And they try to.
That's why they left the Torah. So there's no chashash that they write the entire pasuk of the
Torah. So anyway, so they try to make it so that the parsha sheets do not require geniza, and they could be they're at most tashmishe mitzvah because. People learned over from them, so they could be disposed of respectfully, after Shabbat. Yeah, ideally they should be recycled, but minimally they should maybe all be put into one bag. The bag could be tied up, and then technically it could be thrown away. Although not from time to time, you see not every parsha sheet is careful about this. But if you did an experiment now and went through the Geniza, right, to see what was in there, you'd see all types of things. Like a kid's, like workbook from, Hanukkah.
It has Betzalach Dalet on it.
Yes, right. So these are things that don't require a Geniza. What's another thing that requires Geniza that's not a written text or something in the service of a written text? We don't think of it as Geniza, but it's the same din as Geniza. No. Shofar is like tzitzis. When you're done with it, if shofar becomes posel, you could throw it away. Ramal would say, don't just throw it away, wrap it up. It's hard to think of another mitzvah use for a posel shofar. But... What is the requirement to bury a body? A dead body. It's a form of Geniza. Is there a connection here?
Yeah, like a apostle said, the Torah is a Torah that once contained a certain level of Kedusha, a body contained a neshama. It had to do with the
Avodah Zarah?
It used to be like in a water, so like they would burn the bodies and they would lay them in wake and all sorts of like because no. We don't want to be a water, so we bury them. But then after a year, they would clean out the grave and then take the bones. And
yeah, no,
that's, you don't do these things.
Wasn't it, what's it called? Tzelelokim.
But these ideas are all here connected. All right, so next week we'll look at a piece from Rabbi Soloveitchik. On the connection between Tashmisha Mitzvah, Tashmisha Kedusha, Kfurat Yisrael, and etc.